Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
In the terrible darkness of a southwestern desert night, a terrible choice is made. A deliberate decision to choose dark over light, evil over good. A choice to break the sacred laws of the Dene, to be initiated to a corrupted path by committing vile acts, including murder, and some have even said cannibalism. Through these forbidden rites, they become something else, something no longer human that exists outside the moral order. This is a chosen path, walked willingly, that leads into chaos, away from Hojo, the concept of living in harmony, balance, and beauty. With this choice comes corrupted power, the power to transform into animals, especially those nocturnal predators that shun the daylight. Powerful, savage beasts, beasts like wolves. This witch is feared not only for its power to transform, but because it is evil. It seeks power through the destruction of others. This is a being so feared, a being who represents ideas that are so taboo that the Dene do not utter its name. This is the Skinwalker.
I'm Alan Brill. Welcome to Brilliant, a podcast from the mind of Brill. Warning, it gets dark in here.
Among the Dene, names are not mere labels. To name something is to acknowledge its presence in the world, to breathe life into it, to invite it into the circle of knowing. This is why the name of the Skinwalker is rarely spoken, and even then, only with the utmost caution. That was written by Ashlyn Morgan in her book Skinwalker, The Forbidden Legend of Shapeshifters and Dark Magic. Now, this is a difficult subject to cover. I mean, to cover this subject with as much sensitivity and respect to the Dene as I can, that's my goal. To the Dene, this is more than just a scary story told around the campfire. And it's hard to find reliable information on the Skinwalker, as the Dene speak of it only with great reluctance and very seldom to outsiders. It's a sacred subject. Also, the Dene have a symbolic and non-linear way of storytelling, which can make it even more difficult to get a grasp and understanding of the subject. And I was hoping to find someone in the Navajo Nation to come on the show, because, you know, I'm a white dude from Missouri. I feel absolutely unqualified to speak on it. So I reached out to the staff at a major Navajo newspaper, and I received this response. Thank you for your inquiry. Out of respect for our communities, the Navajo Times staff and I will not comment on this subject. These matters are not discussed publicly, and I am unable to direct you to anyone else who'd be willing to do so. Thank you for your understanding. That email response, it changed my focus from kind of tackling this as an antiquated, scary campfire story to something that's still very real, and hopefully I'll succeed in giving this the appropriate reverence that it deserves, that it demands. And dealing with something that is held with such secrecy, I'm bound to get some things wrong, but I'm going to do the best that I can here. Now, the Dene word for skinwalker roughly translates to, by means of it, it goes on all fours. I will not be using the Dene word for Skinwalker for a couple of reasons. To speak its true name would possibly be to draw its attention. I mean, I'm pushing it using the word Skinwalker as much as I'm going to. And the other reason is that my redneck tongue would totally butcher it, and it deserves more reverence than that. Now, I personally was first introduced to the concept of Skinwalker through Tony Hillerman's Chi and Leap Horn novels. And Skinwalkers really jumped into the public consciousness thanks to Skinwalker Ranch. And since then they've really taken root in our collective imaginations. And I think a lot of us, when we hear the term Skinwalker, we think Native American werewolf. But it is so much more than that, and it is so much worse. In Skinwalker, the forbidden legend of shapeshifters and dark magic, Ashlyn Morgan writes this: to become the Skinwalker is to, quote, abandon humanity and to embrace a power that is unnatural and destructive. The transformation into a Skinwalker begins with a decision, a choice to turn away from Hoto and to pursue power through violence. But it is not just any violence. To complete the transformation, the individual must kill someone within their kinship circle. Often, it is a sibling, a parent, a cousin, someone whose blood calls to their own, end quote. To willingly turn away from one's identity, to willingly take oneself out of harmony, to choose power through violence, and to willingly give up one's humanity, to choose to become evil. Another quote from the book: in the Dene belief, there is no concept more sacred than kinship. To sever ties is not only taboo, it is unthinkable, end quote. This is what's required to become a Skinwalker. There are four forbidden rites one must complete to become a Skinwalker. The first rite is isolation, to remove yourself from your community, to be apart physically and spiritually. Often a cave will suffice to complete these dark acts. The second rite is a desecration of the sacred. This involves chanting prayers backwards and drawing the sacred sand drawings, only doing so inverted. It represents a spiritual inversion, going against all that is good. The third rite is sacrifice, slaying your kin in the moonlight, the most terrible of sins that a person could commit, sacrificing the last bit of goodness and humanity inside of you. And the final rite is the donning of the skin. The killing of the animal is done in ritual fashion. Its death is part of the spell. The witch takes not just its form, but its spirit. Quote, what emerges is neither fully man nor beast, end quote. The witch chants the incantations taken from a black book of forbidden chants and chants them over the skins. Now, this black book, it might be a metaphor, but there's also some that believe that this is an actual book. The witch will select the animal it will become based on the power of that animal, its essence. For instance, an owl for watching, a fox for stealth, a wolf for intimidation, and a bear for strength, etc. And it is fluid in its transformation, and this includes the unholy combination of beast and man, your classic werewolf type looking thing, only with whatever animal it selects. And this combination, this menagerie, this is a mockery of creation, and that's why these evil things will do it. The following account is from Skinwalkers, Shapeshifters, and Native American Curses, by Wendy and Gary Swanson. There's an anonymous man. I'm going to call him Gary. And he was at a treatment center in New Mexico after being exposed to a chemical attack in Iraq. And this was part of his ongoing treatment as he got back. It was experimental type treatments that they were trying out on him. And it was like a 3-month long deal or something like that. Now, while he was at this treatment center in New Mexico, he met up with his old buddy from his unit, also exposed to the same chemical attack, named Dave. And Dave was actually from New Mexico. He's from that area in New Mexico, to be specific. And they were in recovery together. They're both going through this new treatment program together. And whenever the treatment let up, you know, for a couple of weeks, they would go out and they'd hit up the bars and the pool halls and have a good old time. And one night at a pool hall, they ran into an old friend of Dave's. He hadn't seen him since high school. This guy's name was Rick. And, you know, they linked up a few more times. And they all became really close. They became really good friends. And after a night of just particularly hard drinking, they were getting at it, man. Rick said something he had to share with them. And he took them out of the parking lot. He took them out of the truck. And he invited them to accompany him to what he said was going to be a shapeshifter ritual. And Dave got super excited. He just couldn't believe that Rick could get them invited to such a secret ceremony. He's always curious about it, always wanted to see it. He's always heard about them, but they're a real secret deal, so he'd never seen one. Now, Rick made them vow up front they could never speak of what they were about to see that night. And they both agreed. Gary was, you know, caught up in Dave's excitement, really. And they drove back roads, dirt roads, about 30 miles into the desert. They were on roads that were very seldom used, nothing more than two ruts in the desert, basically. And finally, they come up to this barren patch, and there's about a dozen pickups, and like five or six dirt bikes were parked there. And they could see burning in the distance a giant bonfire. And as they're getting on a path to lead to the bonfire, they were held up by a man with a shotgun who shined the flashlight, recognized Rick luckily, and then let him pass. He said he looked like a serious dude. And their question, so they made it past them, they go down the path, they get to the fire, and they're questioned by two more armed men. And when the men were satisfied that Gary and Dave would never speak of what they saw, they were allowed to join the circle with a stern warning that if they ever talked about it, they would die a slow and painful death. But they were allowed to watch. And there was a giant bonfire in the middle of the circle. And all of a sudden it became calm. And one man got to the center of the circle and started doing chants and words. And then he quickly grew in volume, and the people watching him were repeating the words back to him. Quickly, I mean, they'd have to think about this. This is obviously something that they had done before. And then Rick was called to the center of the circle, and they put a shawl on him, like a cape almost, with the hood, I think. And it was made of several different skins that looked like they were sewn together. And so he started dancing and chanting around the fire, and everybody in attendance, well, except for Gary and Dave, they didn't know the chants, of course. They began chanting loudly, and the volume crested. It got super loud, and Rick threw some kind of powder into the fire, and it exploded into a large cloud of smoke. And when the smoke dissipated, where Rick once stood was a 7-foot creature that looked like a giant feather-covered praying mantis. Yikes. And the creature kept dancing to the thunder of the drums, and then it walked around the outside of the circle and got real close to each member in attendance and looked them in the eyes. And Gary and Dave, they saw no resemblance whatsoever to their friend Rick. And then the creature started dancing again, and then another explosion just rocked the night. And when the smoke cleared, there was Rick where the creature once was, dancing as if nothing had happened. After that, it kind of wound down, and Rick was exhausted and very quiet on the ride back. You know, Dave and Gary were just hammering with questions, but all he would say was, later. Well, Gary and Dave, they went back, and a couple of days later they were back at the treatment center, and it was a really intensive part of the program. And for 2 weeks they couldn't leave the treatment center. They, you know, didn't have the strength to. And finally they could, and they, you know, Dave kept calling and calling. They couldn't get Rick to answer, and so Dave started asking around and found out that a hiker had found Rick dead at the bottom of a ravine. But when they looked into it, the only accident reported that night in that area had been 2 days before, when a family had hit a deer with their car, and the responding deputy had rolled the deer off of the ravine. And when they searched the area at the bottom of the ravine where Rick's body was, they could not find a deer carcass. The implication there being that Rick probably turned into a deer one night and got hit by the car.
And that is Gary's story.
The Skinwalker seeks only your destruction, spiritually as well as physically, and it is to be feared above all else. Why would anyone choose this curse? And it is a curse. You do not control this power, it controls you. You'll always be hungry, and you'll never find rest. The curse takes over you, you have no power over it, now it has power over you. You dwell permanently outside of harmony, and forever to be alone. I can only imagine the abuse and pain one must suffer, the feeling of being powerless, the sheer hate one would have to feel to make such a horrible decision. And it's believed by many that the Long Walk created quite a few skinwalkers, made quite a few people turn to this dark path, and new generations of skinwalker were created by this evil stain on human and American history. The Long Walk, or the Long Walk to Bosque Redondo, was the deportation and ethnic cleansing, let's call it what it is, of the Navajo people by the United States federal government and the United States Army. Navajos are forced to walk from their land in western New Mexico territory, modern-day Arizona and New Mexico, to Bosque Redondo in eastern New Mexico. Some 53 different forced marches occurred between August 1864 and the end of 1866. In total, 10,000 Navajos and 500 Mescalero Apache were forced to internment camps in Bosque Redondo. Now, during this forced march and the internment, up to 3,500 people died from starvation and disease over a four-year period. This feeling of hopelessness, this powerlessness over your oppressors, this much death and family members and suffering, yeah, I could see how that could make someone choose the dark side just for a little hope of revenge. This is a case of evil begetting evil. And then I've read originally that the Dene were taught how to shapeshift in order to protect them from the Spanish, who, when they came into the territory and conquered, they used to enslave the Dene, and they were taught how to transform into animals in order to spy on their enemies to protect themselves from that. But this is a big power, and big power corrupts big time. And soon they used their abilities, which were supposed to be passive. They used them, to be more aggressive, to fight and to kill. And then, eventually they were used for personal gain. It's power is power. Now, I read another account in Skinwalkers, Shapeshifters, and Native American Curses by Wendy and Gary Swanson. And this was sent in by a young lady who wished to remain anonymous. A young girl used to go to the cemetery with her grandmother every week in order to honor their relatives. On one such trip, she saw a person on the trail ahead of them, covered head to toe in a gray hooded garment. She asked her grandmother why that person was going on the trail that left the cemetery, a trail she was told she must never go on. Her grandmother told her not to ask of that person ever again. He is going to a forbidden place where only evil lives, and the people that go there are the most wicked of their people. On a future trip, she once more saw this robed figure disappear down the trail, and as a child, her curiosity got the best of her, and she went down the trail a little bit and scampered up to a hill and was hidden out of the way, and she watched this robed figure walk into a clearing, and then it disappeared inside its robe, and a raven flew out of the folds of its now empty robe that lay on the ground. Yep, she saw her skinwalker. The skinwalker, it's not just a mindless killing machine. It is intelligent, and it is deceptive, and it has ways of luring you into the night. It can whisper your name in the dark, mimicking loved ones, both alive and dead. It may even call to you in your own voice. It can appear as a doppelganger, even looking like a family member. But pay close attention, because it can only mimic and impersonate imperfectly. There's always something off, some small thing, the cadence of speech, the color of the eyes, something. The Dene children are taught never to come when they hear someone call their name at night unless they can actually see the person who's calling their name. In a Paranormal Ranger by Stanley Milford Jr., he talks about playing with his cousin in the full moon behind his great-grandparents' house in Oklahoma when one of his cousins yelled that he saw a skinwalker running on the ridge. With no hesitation, his cousin scattered, running all out from their parents. That was the night he realized just how seriously they took the skinwalker. He was raised both on the reservation and half the time off, so he had a foot in both worlds, so to speak, and he'd always heard people talk about it, but never took it seriously, you know. Then he realized that, no, this is a thing that they still indeed took very seriously. Now, 10 years later, he'd have his own encounter in Oklahoma with a skinwalker. It was 1986, and he had gone to the theater to see Maximum Overdrive. The movie got out around midnight, and as he was leaving, he saw an elderly Navajo man sitting on a bench against the wall. He estimated the man's age to be in his mid-80s, and he's surprised to see such an old man out that late and at a Stephen King movie nonetheless. And the old man asked if he was going to Fort Defiance, and Stanley, you know, said he was, and the old man asked for a ride, and he saw no reason not to, and readily agreed. The old man seemed friendly and normal enough on the ride, but is surprised because he has to be let out on the side of the road, and it was far away from any houses. Now, there were no street lights, and the moon wasn't out, so the night was pitch black, and he left the old man on the side of the road and drove away. And as he was driving home, from the corner of his eye, he sensed a movement, and he thought he saw something out of the driver's side window keeping pace with the vehicle. It was on the inside of the fence that divided the highway, so he didn't get a good look at it. At first, he thought, maybe it was a horse. Even a horse would have a hard time keeping up a car at 60 miles an hour. And then the creature jumped over the retaining wall, and he could see that it was covered in white hair from head to foot, and it was running in all fours. He said it looked like a greyhound, only much larger, about 4 feet tall to the top of its back. Its speed, its strength was seemingly limitless. He sped up to 70, 75, and the creature kept pace with him, easy as you please, effortlessly. He looked out the window at it, and it turned and looked back at him and had a mouthful of jagged teeth and glowing fiery orange eyes, which he described as, quote, like hot burning coals glowing up in the darkness, what I imagine hellfire to look like. He said its gaze was intelligent, sinister, hypnotic, and evil, and the message was clear. I could grab you, rip you to pieces, and eat you alive if I so chose, and there would be nothing you could do about it. I knew in that moment the thing was pure evil, end quote. He slid down in the seat as far as he could so he could barely just see over the top of his wheel. He focused on the road in front of him, and that was it. And the only thing he concerned himself with was getting home as fast as he could. He ran inside, slammed the door, braced it, and, seeing his son was in such distress, his dad asked what happened, and he breathlessly told him about the encounter. And his dad just nodded sagely and simply said, son, you just saw a skinwalker. And that was his first time coming face to face with a skinwalker. And people, it is out there in the night. And make no mistake, it hates you. It hates your humanity. It hates that you exist, and it hungers. It hungers for your flesh, for your destruction. To speak its name is to call to it, to give it power, to draw its attention. So speak of it sparingly and with the utmost caution. If you see eyes glowing in the dark, peering at you in the night, do not meet their gaze. If you hear your name whispered in the night, ignore it. Turn around, say a prayer, and walk away.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.